You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Welcome to Desperate. This is a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to revisit the Desperate Housewives. I'm Julia, and I am watching this series for the first time. It's become one of my favorite shows, and I reference it regularly in my regular life, at work, with my friends, and everywhere. So I apologize to everyone who knows me.
Oh, and I'm Jordan. Sorry, I thought you were going to keep going.
And I'm Jordan.
And I have seen this show many times, but I'm very excited to be back and have these in-depth discussions about it.
It's brought up a lot of things for me, and I feel like it's been really therapeutic in my regular life as I've just been, like, going through my life recently. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm finding things I can relate to here that takes away, like, not stigma around it, mm-hmm. but just when you see a character having emotions about a certain thing, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel seen almost. Yeah. And it's been nice.
For sure.
Because I, like, moved apartments, thinking about getting cats. I've just been on the dating scene. And it's been, like, nice to turn to Desperate Housewives now mm-hmm. and then. I also tried to name a character in a script I wrote for work. I tried to name her Susan. That's my fun Desperate Housewives.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. We went with the name Lisa for this character in our script that we were making. And our bosses were like, that's not the right name. Or the clients or somebody. And I was like, how about Susan? They wanted it to sound like a little bit older or something. And I was like, Susan. And my partner also watches Desperate Housewives at work. So she was like, some Desperate Housewives there. And I was like, you know.
Yeah. You're like, it's my entire life.
Yeah. I'm like, it runs my life now. But we watch on Hulu. You can watch on Amazon Prime or Hulu, whatever you have. You could bootleg it. You can BitTorrent it, whatever mm-hmm. you want to do with this. But we love if you watch along. We go episode by episode. You could do it all at once. You can always just tune in. So we'll be here. Enjoy the ride. Also, you can rate or review us. You can tell us your top housewives. You can rank them. We had a fan do that. Mm-hmm. You can send us desperate deeds. That was one of our favorite moments. We got a fan desperate deed.
Please do.
Send them on Instagram or our email. We also tweet once a week. Follow, like, subscribe, mm-hmm. all the stuff.
Yeah.
So today we're watching season 1, episode 20. It's called Fear No More.
Yep.
And I'm really excited. We have been digging our heels in the past couple episodes.
I mean, we're getting close to the end of the season. They're having to really push us forward with a lot of storylines.
Everything, the storylines are like the loops are closing. Mm-hmm. And last episode, we found out about the toy chest. Like, what's up with that? I'm mm-hmm. very excited. Paul Young is a big suspect in this investigation. So we're going to recap what happened in episode 19 really fast. Then we're going to do some desperate deeds. And then we'll go into our regular recap of episode 20 and then our fuck, marry, kill, housewife, or hubby of the week, and then rate the episode on a scale of 1 to 5 apples.
Yep.
So that sounds good. I did that quick and dirty.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, let's dive in. Last week was called Live Alone and Like It, and a lot happened. It was a pretty intense episode. But we'll start with a little recap on Susan. So Susan is still struggling with her breakup from Mike, and her mom is still in town and going through her breakup. And her mom is, like, trying to date and is bringing this creepy guy around who looks like a living mugshot. And his friend comes over and they try to set her and her Susan up with him. And basically,
Lamont.
Fucking Lamont. And Susan basically finally just, like, says to her mom, like, I can't move on like that. Like, I am heartbroken. I am depressed. Like, I'm so sad. Like, and I can't just move on like you can. And I'm frustrated that you can. And they kind of have this heart to heart. And then Sophie goes to Mike to try and get him to, like, come back or, you know, to come around to Susan again, even though that was never the problem to begin with. But anyway. And when she sees Mike, we see him in the middle of his own kind of, like, storyline where he finds out that Deirdre, whatever the fuck her name is, she's dead. And she was the woman in the chest. So that's confirmed. It was the woman in the toy chest that belonged to Paul. And turns out that Deirdre's dad had, like, paid off the cop, which we knew, but Mike finds out, and the cop, like, gives Mike the file while also beating him to a pulp, because Mike makes yeah. a couple comments about cops getting paid off. But yeah. He's given the police file, and he's looking through it, and, like, I think they already knew that Deirdre was probably dead. They just, now it's confirmed, and it's, like, it kind of sucks, so everyone's, like, depressed about it, but...
Well, what I'm wondering is why Mike was, like, investigating this now, if she's been missing for 15 years.
I mean, how long was he in prison?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if he was, like, fresh out of prison. Maybe. He was in prison for 8 years,
maybe. Maybe, like, the dad, like, tried avenues to find her, and then finally was, like, was, I need, like, Mike to do it. One. Yeah, like, this is my last... I don't know.
I want to know more about Mike as the seasons go on.
But when he's going through the, like, file, he also sees that, like, Paul's name is on the suspect list.
Yeah.
So that kind of gets the gears turning.
Yeah.
And then Lynette, she had actually a really nice storyline for once, a good storyline. She helps Mrs. McCluskey, her neighbor that, you know, she can't stand. She, like, keels over in her front yard, and Lynette reluctantly helps
After
her.
After a weird fantasy where Lynette, like, wants her twins to marry her Swedish neighbors. Yeah.
So, Mrs. McCluskey, like, says thank you by giving her a lamp and kind of, like, latches onto Lynette. And Lynette's, like, not vibing with it. She doesn't want Karen as her friend. They don't like each other. But I think we clearly see, like, how lonely Mrs. McCluskey is. And we discussed it in the last episode, but... they're very similar, and I think that is partially why, honestly, Lynette doesn't like her, because I think that is Lynette's future. Finally, like, one day after kind of, like, giving her back the lamp and, like, they have this little throwdown, she notices that, like, Miss McCluskey is not coming out to get this package. So she has, like, this talk with Tom where she's basically like, what if she's, like, dead in there and I didn't go help her? But then what if I help her and then she keeps, like, bugging me? And Tom's kind of like, ah, good luck with that. Yeah. And she's like,
Tom's like, the game's on.
Yeah, he's like, I got things to do. So she finally does go in, and she finds Mrs. McCluskey just, like, sitting in her chair. Clearly, she was unable to get her medicine open, and so she's been, like, stuck. And she's stubborn as hell, but Lynette just, like, realizes, like, sometimes you just have to do things you don't want to do in life. And she just gives this monologue about obligations, and she decides that Mrs. McCluskey is now her obligation. And I almost feel like Miss McCluskey likes the way she worded it, because they kind of have this back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a heartwarming thing, like, just, like, being there for people. And, yeah, sometimes people are fucking annoying, but, you know, if someone needs help, they need help. And that's what you do in life.
Yeah.
And it ends, you know, at the very end of the episode, we see her, like, picking her up to go to the pharmacy and still giving each other back and forth. But, like, they've found, like, a common ground almost, where Lynette just realizes, like, yes, Mrs. McCluskey can be a bitch, but she genuinely needs help. Like, she's helpless if she can't get her fucking pills open.
Yeah.
So, like, Lynette realizes, like, okay, like, this is my lot in life, to take care of a million children and this old lady across the street.
I guess so, yeah. It was very sweet of Lynette, which we don't typically see, because she's usually busy ruining promotions and ruining people's marriages. So I'm back to hating Lynette now. Well, let's see what happens. Well... Gabby had I'd say her storyline had the least amount of meat, but it was still interesting to me because she is just, like, throwing down with Carlos all the time now.
Yeah, now they just fight.
Yeah, now they fight. Kind of here for it. But she's mad because Carlos basically abused her into signing the postnup, and she won't let him sleep in their bed, and they argue about that. He says he's going to tear up all, or not tear up, but, like, basically cut her credit cards, like, cut off her access to her money, which is a controlling move. That's the move of an abuser, to have control
over you.
That's
extremely controlling, yes.
Yeah, so that's how they start the episode, and then Gabby goes and runs into John's arms once again, and they're trying to hook up, and she can't focus because she's thinking about her money situation, which I would be too. I'd be like, my husband is abusing me, but... he offers her his credit card, his 18-year-old credit card.
That his parents paid for.
Yeah, that his parents co-signed for. And he says, I've got money and I've got a business. I might even get the golf club. And she goes, and I think this is a pathetic move, and spends his money on his credit card and buys herself some shoes and a solo lunch. interesting choice.
The ugliest shoes of all time, too. This is, like, the Carrie Bradshaw era of, like, those crazy fucking heels.
Where, like, bedazzled. There's, like, a big jewel on it.
Yes.
And you're like, oh.
The ugly-ass jewel.
They're coming back. Like, it's terrible. Just buy some strappy sandals. Buy some thotty sandals for the summer, everybody. FYI. And so she's at lunch drinking her wine alone with this credit card, and it gets declined at the restaurant several times. And so she thinks on her feet, and she seduces an old man who was very into her. And
he wasn't even that old. Like, again, why doesn't she just date
She should
rich
date
guy?
Him. Yeah, she should date an adult, like 18. He might be legal, but he's still a young guy. And so he buys her lunch, and she has a victorious look towards the waiter, who is absolutely judging her. And then she goes home, and she throws down, slams it in Carlos's face. He is not paying any attention to her. And then she's like, bought these shoes. And he's like, how? Because he's an abusive controller. And she says, well, just so you know, I don't need you. I have other men, and I have options who have money. And a pretty girl is never get lonely. And I realize that I, Julia, am not pretty.
I'm like, I've been lonely before, so shit.
I get lonely. So that's where it ends up. And then at the end, we see Carlos tearing apart the post-nup. And that's where they are. Bree had a great storyline. It was more about Andrew. Andrew was my fuck, marry, and kill last week because he was just incredible. All-star, shined. He gets out of Camp Hennessy, but not without his parents considering sending him to conversion camp. So they invite the Reverend over to talk some sense into him, talk him out of being gay, okay, it's not like that, people. So they have this dinner, and the Reverend is kind of cool. He's like, Andrew says that he knows who he is, and the Reverend is like, I can't force you to be righteous, so, you know, here we are. I'm going to enjoy this steak or whatever.
Yeah.
And Bree freaks out, reveals to her son that Rex likes BDSM. Rex comes in and is an all-star as well and says, I support my son being gay. If he's happy, he's happy. And Rex got our hubby of the week, and he also got Jordan's Mary, so... Shout out Rex.
Yeah, shout out Rex. Real turnaround this season.
We hope we keep liking him for a while. Real turnaround because I hated him episode one, but he's kind of on the top of my list right now. So that's where, Andrew goes to the Reverend and takes an oath, and the Reverend's like, are you sure you're not gay? Because I think you're gay.
Yeah.
And Andrew's like, Andrew says that he's bi, we think. He says he likes chocolate and vanilla. The Reverend says you should just like vanilla. And Andrew delivers a chilling monologue about how he's going to ruin his mother's life one day. He's going to rock her world. And when that happens, he'll know paradise. But until then, he's going to be a very good boy so that he can just fuck up her life. I thought it was evil and insidious, and I was very turned on by it.
So. And that's going to be a yikes.
Yeah. So... that's where we ended up with our storylines. There was really no Paul or Edie or anybody. It was just a straight four-family storyline there. And then we can just roll on to our desperate deeds.
Yeah, let's do it.
A couple episodes ago, I did say that I had an injury desperate deed related to my ankle. I already told one where I, like, emailed my professor very drunk in a flirtatious way about my ankle and sent him a picture of my ankle, which was very embarrassing and desperate to not get penalized for missing a quiz. Great times. This one was just this last winter. I was hooking with this guy, and I was walking down his stairs one day, and I missed a step. And I just fucking sprained my ankle. And it was very early in the morning because I was leaving his house to go to work. And I knew that I injured my ankle. And it was a very loud fall. I, like, fell completely on my butt. And, like, I heard, like, the crack. And he didn't even get up, which still haunts me to this day. He did not get up to check on me. He did not even, hey, how are you? Nothing. Sociopathic.
Okay, yeah.
And it was very early, but I was like, you weren't asleep and you definitely heard me. So, yeah, he did say also that he heard me, and he said, I figured that you would call me if you needed anything. And I was like, sick. So I walk my sprained ankle home. No, I don't walk it home. I walk into my car, and then I drive home with my sprained right ankle.
Oh, my God.
And then I get home and I'm like, I need this ankle to be better because I just feel like weird that I sprained my ankle at his house. And I also want to continue to see him. And I feel like if I have a sprained ankle, that gets in the way of that.
Oh, man.
So I'm like, I'm going to ice the shit out of this and just pretend it's not sprained. Like, I'm just going to get it's over fine. This. Just ice it, like some ibuprofen. I'm going to be cool.
Perfect.
It looks like a balloon. I have pictures. I sent a picture to my mom. I called my mom, obviously. She's a nurse. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think I sprained my ankle. And I'm like, truly, like, I don't want this. Like, I need to keep work. It's winter. I'm going to be eating. It was like the week of Christmas. And I was like, I'm going to be eating a shit ton. I need to work out. I'm just like really anal like that. I take the ice pack out of my freezer and I just put it straight on my skin. Mm-hmm. Just put it straight on my skin because I'm like, fuck it. Like, I need this to be frozen.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it did. It froze my skin. I gave myself an ice burn. So on top of having my sprained ankle, I gave myself an ice burn because I truly didn't want my life to stop and I wanted to keep hooking with this guy and I didn't want him to know how severe my injury was from his household that he didn't check on me. It was a little desperate. And I still have a scar. I now have a scar on my ankle. It is purple because I gave myself a size burn.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
A permanent
reminder. Damage. Yep. About how he didn't check on me.
That's brutal.
It's pretty brutal. So.
Mine is also... No, it's not injury related. It's actually fake injury related. But it reminded me of when you sent your professor the picture of your ankle. My desperate deed will be short. But basically, in college... I was very desperate there at the end to, like, I didn't go to class one day. Like, I just didn't go. So I was like, fuck, how do I get out of this? So instead of, like, just going to class when I should, I spent a solid 3 hours trying to Photoshop an old doctor's note I had. I had no idea how to use Photoshop.
You, like, buy Adobe. Like,
I think I got some free trial or shit.
Oh, my God.
I had no idea what I was doing. So the effort I put into that, I should have just gone to class, you know? Should have just gone to class. And that's it. I mean, that's a super stupid, desperate deed, but it's true.
Like
3 hours.
That. No, I love how probably short more. And sweet it is. I love that it's just, yes.
Brutal, man. I just remember sitting there thinking, like, I remember as I'm doing it, I'm like, this is so pathetic. Like, pathetic. Like, just go to class, nerd.
Yeah, so I think the moral of the story is don't be like us. Yeah. Like, don't fucking, like, give yourself an ice burn over a guy, like...
For sure.
That didn't even check on your health after you injured yourself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, high point of my life last winter. Well, this episode today, like I said, season 1, episode 20, it's called Fear No More. You can watch along with us, but we're going to go watch the episode and then we're going to come back and we hope that things just unfold even more.
Yep.
So excited. So catch you guys soon. But as always, buckle up.
Buckle up.
Season 1, episode 20, Fear No More. Gabby is pregnant and discovers the unpleasant truth of exactly how that happened. Bree toys with the idea of having a friendship with George, leaving Rex feeling more insecure than ever. When an ex returns into Tom's life, Lynette goes the distance to make her place known. The tension between Paul and Susan mounts and explodes.
This tops everything.
We got a lot to talk about this episode.
We have the return of Shaft.
You mean half?
Halves.
You mean halves?
So Jordan and I think, should we say it now or wait?
Yeah, let's just kick it off.
We think that Mark Geary is a really big Shaft fan, and he wrote the entire season 1 of Desperate Housewives in an attempt to hire Shaft as this detective and, like, change the name to Halves because he just shifted the S to the N.
Yes, the Richard Roundtree's character is a private detective, and his agency is called Halves, and I'm losing my mind. I'm losing my mind about it, actually. I'm going to lose sleep over this.
Yes, and like
I need someone to interview Richard Roundtree and be like, what's the deal, man? What was this pitch to you? Like, I need to know the pitch.
I need to know too, because it is very close. Like, if anybody if you haven't seen Shaft, watch Shaft.
I love Shaft.
It's like, I watched it the other day, and we watched there's like four or five, like, there's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. There's so many. But now it's like a different younger guy where they feature Samuel L. Jackson and the original Richard Roundtree all in one movie. That's the one we've seen. And then I saw the original the other day with just Richard Roundtree. Like, the new ones are more action-packed. The first one was a little bit slow, but it has everything you'd want from, like, that era of television.
It's a great character. I love the character of Shaft. It's fun. Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know. I just can't imagine he's not a fan. The only thing I could think of is, like, maybe it was purely a coincidence that Richard Roundtree got hired to play this character that just happened to be, like, a detective.
No, I feel like there's no way.
No, and then they retroactively, when they knew they were going to bring him back, that's when they added the halves thing. Maybe they realized, like, oh, shit.
Yeah, so we see the return of Shaft, and it's Susan is hiring him to look into Paul.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So Susan has quite the storyline this episode.
Yeah.
And that's also where we start our episode with Mary Alice doing some VO for Susan, which we don't see a lot.
We don't really see Susan start out with the VO.
No, that's often. My question, because Susan's like, I would die for Mary Alice. I'd take the bullet. And yeah. Then, like,
Mary Alice doesn't give
a fuck about Susan. We see Susan, like, writing in her bed, looking cute. Body goals, as always. And
as always.
She literally, her body's crazy.
Her body's insane, and it's... upsetting.
And she says, since she was little, Susan wanted to be a mother in the worst way. And that's how I know that I don't really care to be a mother, because I was never one of these women. Like, I meet women who are like, I wanted it forever. And I'm like, I don't ever think about kids.
You're like, I don't know if that's for me.
No, I just don't ever. Yeah. So from the first day she brought Julie home from the hospital, she was, like, basically a horrible mom. Despite her desire to do well, her daughter, she suffered from countless failures. It took her years to realize that the best parents make mistakes now and then. But now Julie was a teenage girl. Susan has started to realize there was no room for error. And we see psychotic Zach outside throwing rocks at her window.
Yeah. And then he, like, hits her in the face with an entire handful.
Yeah, Susan goes to yell at Julie and is like, tell him to go away. Why are you still talking to him? And she's like, I'm not answering the window. Like, I hate Zach.
Yeah, she's like, no, he's a psychopath.
Susan lifts it up and he throws, like, a handful of pebbles. And then Zach is now inside their house after, which I thought was psychotic, too. I'd be like, I would never let him in my house after that.
Mm-mm.
And he's apologizing profusely. And he's just like, I've been trying to get a hold of Julie, but she's ignoring me, and I just wanted to talk to her and, like, maybe hang out. And I'm like, what time of night was it, though? What the fuck?
I mean, Julie was, like, asleep.
Yeah, and Julie is being the chillest. She says, let's just cool it for a bit. Like, let's not hang out. And he's like, why? Like, and she's like, because you threw rocks in my mom's face. And, like, also you're a psychopath. Like, you're a school shooter. Like,
she's just not interested in him. And it's like, dude, get over it. Like,
yeah.
And now he's gonna be one of those guys when he's older that got his heart broken by a girl, so he becomes a fuckboy. It's a fuckboy origin story.
Is it?
Yeah,
I feel like this is incel energy origin story.
No, I think this is, like, the type of thing where he becomes hot this rejection.
Oh my god.
And then becomes an asshole.
Probably, but he was fucking weird. He was a weirdo. This is weird behavior.
Super weird.
He basically dips, and Julie's like, thank you. I've been trying to break up with him for weeks now, and, like, now I have an excuse. And Mary Alice says Susan had many failures as a mom, so she took her victories where she could get them with, like, rocks in her eyes. She's, like, in so much pain. And then we do our little intro, and there's a great opening shot of Wisteria Lane, I noticed.
Yeah, I didn't realize how big the houses were.
Yeah, they're fucking
huge. Borderline mansions.
Yeah, it's like an aerial shot that, like, zoom comes down. It was great. And Mary Alice Young says spring comes every year to Wisteria Lane when flowers bloom, butterflies come out of their cocoons, bees start to collect their nectar. When one man's fancy turns into an obsession, and we cut to George, like, looking at orchids.
Yeah.
And so we can maybe start with Bree.
Do we want to start with Bree's story? Or do we want to start with Susan's story?
It's up to you.
I don't care. Either way.
We can go into Bree's. Okay. Well, I'm trying to think.
I just feel like Susan's, like, Bree's is a little more fun.
Okay, we can start with Susan.
Yeah.
So, all right. We'll get back to Bree and George. Yeah. But that's where they start. So, Susan, after this encounter with Zach, she's like...
Well, her story kind of gets a moment without her. because Paul goes up to Edie to ask her, like, why they're in his house. Oh, and Edie spills the fucking beans, like, yeah, real quick. Yeah,
Edie doesn't even try to hold it in.
Well, she kind of does, and then Paul's like, well, I'm going to call the police then. And she's like, oh, shit.
But so, why did that even shake her? Like, she was seeming so confident before that. She was like, do whatever you want. And then all of a sudden, he starts to walk away, and she's like, we broke into your house.
Like, yeah, she's like, Susan's, like, obsessed with you. Not in, like, a sexual way. Like, yeah. Like, she thinks you're a fucking creep kind of way.
Well, Paul approaches her, and he says, sorry, hold on. Let me see. Paul is like, the night we I just like that he was like, the night I found you in my house. And I'm like, the night they banged.
The night you fucked.
And he's like, why were you really there? And I wrote, he's only asking us because he knows that she's out of his league.
Yeah, he's been up all night, like, for weeks, thinking about, like, the fact that, like, why did she have sex with me?
He's like, there's no way she would have banged me if she wasn't there or something else. Yeah, so she spills the beans, and Paul is like, thanks for everything. And then Mike comes over and is like, what's up? And Edie, like, tells him everything. Edie tells Mike, too.
For no reason. Yeah. For no good reason.
She goes, we broke into his house because Susan is crazy, and Mike is, his brows are furrowed, and he's very confused, yeah, but also suspicious because he knows that Paul's a suspect.
Yeah.
So then we see Susan at the coffee shop, and Mike rolls the fuck in. Yeah. She sits down with total strangers, and these girls don't even help her out. They don't even introduce her in a conversation when she clearly is avoiding somebody. And Mike is like, I see you.
Yeah, Mike's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and Susan's like, talk to you girls later. And then he gives her a warning. Mm-hmm. He gives her a chilling warning saying, don't hang out with Paul. And she's like, wasn't planning on it. And he's like, yeah, but don't.
He's really, like, stay away from
he's
him.
He's like, really don't.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I'll do that. And he says he's a dangerous man. And then he fucking leaves.
Yep.
And I was like, okay. And then the next thing we see, Sophie is hanging beads from the doorway in Susan's house, which I would lose my mind if my mother tried to alter anything in my household.
Yeah, fuck no.
She can give me gifts, but she can't hang up beads like that.
You don't get to decide where the gift goes.
No, that's a discussion if you're going to hang up beads in your doorway, like you are a Rastafarian.
Yes, like, yes.
No, it's crazy. So the doorbell rings and it's Zach, and he's leaving Julie a gift. And Susan is like, we've had enough. Don't do this. And he's like, but I want to be friends with you. Oh, no, he's leaving the gift for Susan because he wants to be friends with her.
Yeah.
But Susan has to break it to him that Julie doesn't like him. And she says, you freaked out the other week and you almost blinded me. We're never going to be friends. And he's like, I was out of line, but I was upset. And it's like, get it together, kid.
Yeah, no, like, that's obviously not. It's so obvious that that's not how you should act. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and then he says, we need to get over this for Julie's sake. The most psychotic line ever.
Yeah, and Julie's like, yeah, I'm
Susan,
good, dude.
Susan is like, Julie doesn't think of you as her boyfriend. Sorry to be the one to tell you that. And she says she actually wants nothing to do with you. And he says, I don't believe you. She only thinks that because you hate me. And Paul is, like, on to the fact that his son is being psycho and is like, get the fuck over here. Felicia's watching the whole thing, and it's, like, a neighborhood scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then Felicia, that's where it ends there. Zach goes home, gets yelled at by Paul.
Yeah, we can kind of circle back to
their
story.
Yeah, we can, like, hit on that in a minute. But then Felicia is watching this, and she has a flashback. And it's a Martha Huber flashback. Mm-hmm. So we get to see some Martha Huber. She's looking at a picture, and she's like, how do you know Mary Alice Young? And she's like, we used to work together. And she's like, yeah, but she's my neighbor now. And, like, how do you, like, what? And yeah, she says, does she have a... I don't know if Felicia asked it. Somebody asked it, and they touch on that she has a boy, young boy.
They have one child, yeah.
Yeah. And this gets Felicia thinking, and she tells Martha the story about, like, we used to work at this clinic. This chick, this drug addict, gave birth to a boy, and then, like, Angela disappeared, and so did the kid, but, like, nobody put it together. So we get some info there,
mm-hmm,
and we're like, oh, my God, another mystery kind of solved.
Yeah.
So Mary Alice Young kidnapped Dana, a.k.a. Zach, who is the son of a drug addict, and there we are.
A drug addict?
That's what she said.
Just a drug addict?
I don't know. Was there anything else that I missed? What? I don't
remember. You didn't put... Wait.
I didn't take any other notes. I was, she was a drug addict.
Well, who was in the chest?
Deidre. But that didn't occur to me.
Oh, okay.
Is that, like, am I supposed to put it together? Yeah. Deidre's the mom?
Well, why else would she be in their chest?
Oh, I didn't know the chick went missing. I didn't know the chick went missing. I thought only the boy went missing. I thought the chick was still alive.
Oh, the mom.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't catch that the mom was dead or went missing.
Well, we don't know that the mom went missing, but we do know that a woman turned up in their chest.
Oh, I didn't put it together. I'm like, what? You're like looking at me and I'm like, I fucking have no idea. I have no idea at all. I was like, yeah, she's a drug addict. Like,
you're like, remember like they keep talking about how Deirdre had all those drug problems.
Oh, I didn't put it together at all.
Now I feel like, oh no.
Oh shit. I was just more like encompassed in this flashback. I was more like enthralled to the flashback. Okay. I was like, oh my God, Martha Huber's back. And like,
I did like that Martha Hugh. I like that they brought her back for a flashback, though, instead of just Felicia explaining.
You were like just a drug addict?
And I'm like, come on.
I was like, meth? I was like, cocaine? I don't know what type of drug. Like, I don't know. Yeah, that was my only note. I said the bio mom was a drug addict, and that child was lucky. And I said, it's all coming back. OMG, those are my notes.
Well, I mean, and I think, like, Felicia's right, though. Like, and this just makes Martha look like even more of a bitch for blackmailing them. It's like, sounds more to me like Mirella saved a child from being in the foster system or whatever. Like,
yeah. Like, well, wow. Okay, this shit's popping off. So now we know. So this all ends with Susan just hanging out one night, and she grabs the phone book and she calls Shaft. She leaves the
half. She calls half.
Yeah, she calls half. She leaves the most this message like gave me chills. And she's worried about the neighbor across the street. This family has a secret, and I'm in over my head. I need you to find out everything you can about Paul Young and his family. Then cut to the Haft.
Well,
being like, yeah.
Yeah, and she's in over her head because her kitchen explodes.
Yeah. Oh, I had that in a different part of my, yes.
Oh, okay.
So,
sorry, I didn't know how we were going to break that.
Oh, my God. Yes. Before that, they're at this party, a goodbye party for Carlos, and like, her kitchen just fucking explodes.
Yeah, and it's possible that it was Sophie, but Susan is worried that it was something more nefarious than that.
Yeah, because like, she looks out across her destroyed kitchen and sees Paul across the way just staring.
Yeah.
So that's what's up.
And so Susan, like, is freaked out, but also is like, I think she's just tired of the bullshit. Like, fuck it. Get me the answers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, fuck this shit.
I mean, I'm worried for her, too, because Paul also invites her over at a certain point in this episode. And he's like, let's just kick it. You want to know about Angela? And this was after Mike had warned her, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is after Mike warned her. And she goes into his household.
She doesn't listen. She doesn't listen.
She never listens. And so she's there. And he's like, yeah, she changed her name. Angela was her aunt's name. And
they had a falling out.
And Susan's like, that was the lamest story ever.
Paul's bad at coming up with fake-ass stories.
Yeah, it was so boring and terrible. So that's also something that she learns. So when she looks across the way and sees Paul there, she's like, he's a fucking liar, and, like, I know it. So that's what causes her to call half. So, sorry, I put my notes for the party in a different section.
Oh, okay.
But there's a big party this episode at Gabby's house for Carlos.
A lot goes down.
So should we cover Gabby next, or do you think we should save that for last? Maybe Lynette. Let's cover Lynette.
This story was actually pretty.
This Lynette slaps you.
Second episode in a row. Good storyline.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good storyline. Like, okay, you said last time that she's realistically flawed, and I agree.
I think that how she handles this situation is exactly how I probably would.
You think? I was like, she's being psychotic.
No, I think I would be freaked out.
I would be, okay.
So this is why I think it's a bad idea to get with somebody that's cheating on another person with you.
Absolutely.
Because you're always going to be haunted by that. And I think it'll always be something that you worry about. And I just felt like this was realistic. I don't know. Maybe I just wouldn't handle something like this very well.
I wouldn't handle it well, but I wouldn't do what she did. And I'll tell you the points exactly where I wouldn't do what she did.
Okay, let's break down the whole thing, and then we're going to go back and discuss each part.
Top line. Lynette goes to work one day, and Tom is there, and he's working with this girl named Annabelle. Mm-hmm. And Lynette sees Annabelle and is like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
She knows Annabelle because Annabelle is Tom's ex-girlfriend before Lynette.
So we get a nice little backstory of how Tom and Lynette met.
Yes.
So he was with Annabelle, and he was not the marrying kind. And then
he met Lynette Lindquist.
Yeah, Lynette Lindquist was an up-and-coming executive, and they end up having, I guess, an affair, I guess. And then
kind of, yeah.
He breaks up with Annabelle and then marries Lynette and goes on to be the, like, have a bunch of kids. And then Annabelle, like, in her despair, moves to Chicago.
And they've only been married for 8 years, I noticed. Yeah. It said 8 years ago, and I was like, 8 years? That's it?
Yeah.
That's it? 8 years?
And then right away, I guess, they start popping out these...
I guess. Less than 8 years. So, yeah. So she's like, you've been in Tom's office. So she's been there for 3 months, and Tom has not mentioned once that his ex-girlfriend came back to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also revealed that he helped get her hired. He referred her. And he's like,
which means they must have been in contact.
He's like, it's the least I could do because, like,
because
I feel guilty that I broke her heart. And I'm like, you should never feel guilty about that, Tom. You're fucking happily married, apparently. So why are you getting this bitch? Why are you getting this broad a job? Like, what?
8 years after the fact.
I would be pissed.
Like, right away, if it had happened, like, maybe in the moment, being like, I'm so sorry, you know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's 8 years on. Like,
it's 8 years.
Water under the bridge.
8 years
point.
And four fucking kids. Get out. Like, oh my goodness. So next thing we know, Tom comes home and Lynette is like in a dark corner. And she's like three. Oh. She's like
the godfather.
She
when
needed
he gets
to
home.
Have like a gun and like a glass of scotch. 3 months. She says 3 months, really.
I mean, I'd be yeah.
Well, yeah,
we'll come back.
No, I wouldn't have done it this way. I would have been screaming on the phone.
Yeah.
And so she's like, were you ever going to tell me? And he's like, kept putting it off because I know you how you'd react. And like, I didn't hire her, but I vouched for her. That's when he reveals it. And you're like, what the fuck? And she goes, do you still have feelings for her? And this is the first time that I've seen Lynette insecure. I did note that. I'm like, I haven't really seen her this insecure. Maybe with the nanny, but this is a different type of insecurity.
Yeah.
This is like... this is your ex insecurity. This is, like, the nanny was a random chick that you're like, are you fantasizing about her? But this is, like, you have literally fucked this woman.
Yeah.
So I see her fully. And she's like, do you still care about her? And he's like, I was trying to be a good guy. And Lynette's just like, get her, like, what? Like, transfer her. Like, why is she working with you? Get her a job, but, like, she doesn't have to work with you.
Yeah.
And Tom, like, cuts it off and... he's not really open to discussion, which I thought was a lame Tom move.
I did not like Tom in that part of the
movie. But also, Lynette did something crazy, and this is not what I would do. This is one of the things I wouldn't do. She says, if you're not going to transfer and you're going to keep working with her, you can bet that I'm going to be there lunch, birthdays, retirement parties. I'm going to be showing up at your work. And I'm like, Lynette, chill. Like, I wouldn't be there. So that's one thing where I was like, Lynette's a little bit off her rocker. And then he said, I better you parking because she's going to stay. And he walks away. And I was like, you should get divorced. That's fucked up. So that's point one. Then Lynette comes into work wearing a kind of revealing dress, I noticed. It wasn't super revealing, but for Lynette, I was like, she's always wearing, like, men's shirts and shit. And I was like, what's happening? So she's looking nice.
Yeah, she's dressing it up a little bit.
And then Annabelle is being lovely to her. Mm-hmm. She says, if you're looking for Tommy's over there. And she's like, I'm actually not. And Annabelle tries to be cool because Lynette's like, I was looking for you. And Annabelle says, yeah, I was thinking we could hang out. And I was like, point one for Annabelle. And Lynette laughs and just starts going in. She says, do you have feelings for Tom? And Annabelle's like, I fucked plenty of men in the last 8 years.
Yeah. Goes,
that's not what she says, but she's just taken aback. She says, what? And, like, I don't understand. Like, Tom and I were in love, but he married you, and I'm not looking to break up a happy marriage because isn't that your speed, Lynette? And I'm like, point two, Angela. Or Annabelle.
Yeah, whatever the fuck her name is, yeah.
And I said, Annabelle was the fire there. And Lynette said, watch your step. Tom and I are a team. Nothing could break us up. And that's also another point where I would never say that, Lynette, because it automatically sounds fucking psycho and not real.
Sounds desperate.
Sounds desperate. You don't say, you know what? He loves me so much. So, like, we're good. It's like, what? Shut up. That's not, no, you don't say it aloud. Like,
yeah.
So, point. That's my second point where I wouldn't do that. But Annabelle just, like, walks away and is like, why are you here if you're such a team?
Yeah, so she basically has the upper hand on Lynette. So then Lynette goes to Edie for advice.
I did like this.
I did like it, too. I like when they talk. But Edie basically tells her, like, if I feel threatened by a woman, I keep her close. And then she makes a joke about how she's never felt threatened, which I liked. But she's like, oh, so basically tells her, like, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer type of thing.
Yeah, so, she says, you have two options. And then she's like, wait, is the girl hot? And Lynette's like, yeah. She's like, well, you have one option. She's like, become her friend.
Yeah. So then, like, later on, like, Lynette decides to have a dinner party. And when she says dinner party, it's just Annabelle and them. I thought there'd be more people.
There should have been more people. It was so uncomfortable.
And they do this weird, like, Lynette does this bullshit where she has, like, the kids drop happy family photo and the kids are ruining it for her because kids are stupid. And then, like, and Tom end up having to leave to go work late. And Tom's, like, drunk, so that does not help.
Okay, so I have a lot of problems with the dinner party, quote unquote. The dinner party with just Annabelle would never, ever do that. Would never be like, hey, babe, you want to have, like, dinner with your ex? Like, yeah, tonight. Like, yeah.
No.
And then force my kids to draw a picture of our happy family like a psychopath. Psycho.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that was just the most, like, those are my points where I was like, I didn't have respect for Lynette for being this, this is the most desperate on the season so far.
But then after the party, like, Annabelle's in the bathroom or whatever, and she and Tom have this, like, throwdown, Lynette and Tom, and, like, Tom basically is, like, frustrated that she doesn't trust him, and it goes back and forth, and he calls her out, and he's like, you've told me multiple times, like, if I ever cheat on you, you're gonna leave with the kids, and I'll never see you again. And she's like, that's just something wives say to their husbands. And he's like, no, like, not all wives. Like, I don't want you saying that. And, like,
you're so convinced I'm gonna be unfaithful. You won't be happy until you drive yourself out of this marriage to prove that you're right.
Yeah.
And everything stops. But it's the truth. Like, your actions can, like, drive people away when you are like this. Like, because I am a person who, like, has gotten jealous and insecure. I haven't been, like, we're a team. But, like, when you are always talking, okay, because Lynette obviously went a little bit crazy after she sees Annabelle. And I bet that that's all she's fucking talked about to Tom. Can I trust you? Are you going to be faithful? Like
do you love me?
Yeah, do you love me? Like, that shit, like, drives people away. And so, like, he's just saying facts. It was rude, but he said facts.
So, now that we've kind of gone through their main points here, I relate to Lynette because I think there is, I don't think she doesn't trust Tom, but I do think, like, Annabelle's a specifically sore spot. And I think the fact that he didn't tell her 3 months.
Oh, my God.
3 months, dude. Like, that's suspicious behavior. That's what I think Tom doesn't get is that, by withholding that information, appearance-wise, I would be like, so are you guys fucking? Because why? There's no other reason for you to not tell me that she's around.
I would be immediately insecure at that fact. I don't know that I would ever get over that fact that he didn't tell me for 3 months.
So for him to be like, while I agree, like, your actions, like, you can drive people to do the things you don't want them to by constantly accusing them of that. Like, of course. But, like, he... that was shady. And I think, like, what he doesn't, I don't know, I just don't think it's fair for him to be like, you're gonna push me that direction. Okay, but you also did things to make her more insecure about the situation. So I don't really think that he's, like, got this moral high ground about it. Like, I didn't love how he handled it. And I don't think it's fair for him to, like, say that to her because, like, now she's already suspicious, and it's like, okay, so you're basically just confirming the fact that I should be worried about this.
Yeah, I don't think Lynette's in the wrong at all to feel the way she feels, and I would feel the exact same, if not, like, 10 degrees, like, worse. Like, I would be super insecure. I'd be really jealous. I just don't think I would do these crazy actions. I would just suffer in silence, personally.
No, like, I wouldn't have done the dinner party thing.
I would have definitely, there would have been a lot of fights. I would have been miserable. I would have been, like, calling all my friends. I would have been crying, but I don't know that I would have. I mean, maybe I do have some respect for Lynette. That's, like, a big thing. You tried. I would have not even addressed this chick. I would have, like, just taken it all out.
She tried for the right reason. Tried because she's trying to be a spy, basically.
But
I think if I were Lynette too, when she goes to work and is, like, talking to Annabelle, and Annabelle made the comments she made, I would tell Tom, like, she made these comments. Like, to me, that screams that she's up to no good. Like, yeah, that's disrespectful. At the end of the day, like, they are married, and I don't think Tom's actions were very respectful.
No. Is this a secret Tom was keeping when Rodney came to town?
No.
Oh, shit. I'm like, I was wondering that throughout it. I'm like, this is pretty fucked up. This is a fucked up secret.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is, but there is something else that happens. So I'm like not sure if maybe that was in reference to this or that was
something. I don't think it was because it wasn't in like the previously on. Like yeah. They would have referenced it, but like I think that this is a fucked up secret to keep from your partner. Like if my ex walked into work, I would probably be talking about it that night at dinner to my partner. I'd be like, so my ex works with me now. Like
I wouldn't have vouched for my ex to work at my business. No. I think that alone was, like, not
cool. None of mine are qualified to work with me.
But also, like, Tom knew he was going to have to work with her intimately. Like, they're basically business partners.
Yeah, I don't like that.
That's fucking weird. And then when he leaves with her after the dinner party and he was, like, a little tipsy.
Yeah, like, she's like, I'll drive. And then she's like, I'll deliver him back to you in time. And it's like,
ugh. No, but, like... Okay, so your wife's worried that you're going to cheat on her, so you're going to leave with the woman that she's worried about while you're a little drunk? Like, if that's not set up for bad behavior, I don't know.
I don't think, I mean, being drunk is not an excuse.
He's a little drunk. They are in the middle of a fight. If Annabelle tried something, like, he's primed to make a bad decision.
Yeah, but he would have made it sober anyway, I think. I don't think being drunk is like, oh, I was drunk, so that's, like, why.
No, but I think, like, it loosens your inhibitions, and if he's already upset with Lynette about everything she's saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, if I were him, like, why can't they work on it there?
I don't know. That's a good question. I guess we weren't at work from home then, but.
I don't know, I just feel like they could have.
I don't know. I feel stressed by the storyline, personally. I feel super stressed by it. But good on Lynette for trying to work with Annabelle here. But I feel worried about Tom. I do think, Lynette, you could chill, stop bothering him about it. And I think she tries. I think at the end we see something where she tries to be chill. Oh, he leaves for work. She's like, bye.
I don't think he had a right to put his foot down, too, when they were talking the first time about it.
No, I think he could have been more like, we can transfer her. Like, is she that much of an all-star at her job, like, that he needs her there?
I just don't see why he had to defend her so much.
Yeah. I feel suspicious about it.
I didn't like either of their behavior, but I feel like out of frustration or pure, like, no one makes the right decision when they feel this way. Like, you act irrationally. So that's why I say, like, I could see myself doing the dumb shit Lynette does if I was that upset. Or stressed out.
Yeah, I would have a different approach, but that's like, so I know. Yeah, I would never be like talking to this woman. I'd be too like petrified. Like,
I wouldn't. No, I don't think I'd do that. But I'm just saying, like, I could see why she went that route.
Yeah,
she is desperate to prevent something horrible from happening. And I think part of it too is they do have a lot of kids. Like, if their marriage falls apart, like, that's gonna be a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, he better get ready to saddle up some child support there.
Yeah.
Some mad child support for those four kids. Mm-hmm. So he better hope he keeps that job and makes more money.
Yeah.
Annabelle better have been worth it. So next we can cover Bree. Or do you want to cover Gabby?
Let's do Bree.
Okay. Then Gabby. So like I said, we opened with George looking at some orchids and mm-hmm. like I fucking Bree from across the pavilion, wherever they are. It's outdoors.
Yeah.
So he goes up to them. It's Bree and Rex together. And he's like, nice to see you, Bree. And he's like, Dr. Vandekamp.
Yeah. Like,
just the smuggest look. And he says, how's your health? And he says, shit, actually, not good. My doctor's an idiot. And he's like, sick. Good I ran into you guys. Want to go to this bonsai exhibition like next week. And Rex is like, a whole evening of that, wouldn't it be easier to shoot me? And I'm like, what a fucking stick in the mud.
Why would he say that? Why would he say that if he doesn't want Bree and George hanging out? Like, what the fuck's wrong with him?
And Rex is feeling the tension because Bree is like, let's just go, the two of us.
Bree's so insane in this episode. Like, what?
She's trying to kick it with George for real. Like, she wants to let go, I think. But also, George is, like, eating up every word. She, like, touches his shoulder, and he, like, pats it. He never washes that jacket again.
No.
Never. That jacket is still sitting in his closet right now. Like, his handshakes. Bree suggests that they go together, and Rex is like, we have a thing that night. And Bree is like, stop being insane. That's not true. And George just guns blazing says, what are you jealous, Rex?
And then Bree's like, yes, we did date during the separation, but that's over now. We're just good friends. Right, George? And George is like, yes, ma'am. Anything you say.
Oh, my God. And then he's like, I don't feel jealous. It's fine. And then Bree links arms with both of them on the way
this
out.
This is the craziest shit. I can't believe it. I'm literally sitting here like,
oh, my God.
Okay, she and Tom should just hang out because they're fucking little hanging out with.
Yeah, and then they do this whole, like, symbolic conversation where Bree's like, I convinced Rex to buy his first orchid, and George is like, you better learn how to take care of them because there's nothing worse than an owner who won't take care of something that he loves. And Rex is like, I hate weeds. They pop up everywhere. They're hard to get rid of. And then cut to the next scene. Oh, it was wild. Bree is wilding out.
Yeah, so then it's like her, the next scene is just her and Rex talking, right?
Yeah, Rex says that they should change their pharmacy and that he's been thinking about George, and he's like, I don't think you should go out with him, like, and Bree is like, he's my only friend interested in cultural things, though, which I'm like, find another friend, Bree. Go alone. Yeah. Why do you need to, like, hang out with this?
No, this shit's
weird. I don't hang out. Nobody hangs out with exes. If they do, it's weird. It's
not
weird.
Even exes. The man, like, literally confessed to her in a hospital bed how obsessed with her he is.
Yeah, the incel energy. And Rex says he's still in love with you. And, like, she says he just wants to be friends. And he's like, well, what else would you say to, like, like a chick that you're in love with that doesn't want to be with you? And I said, valid point, Rex. And I saw the way that he was looking at you. He's never gonna wash that jacket again. He trembled. His hands trembled. And Bree's like, oh, really? And he's like, yeah, my hands trembled the same way when we first started dating. And she's like, well, do they still tremble? And he's like, well, we've been married for 18 years. Of course not. And she's like, and after 18 years, you still don't know when you need me to when I need you to lie to me. So, Rex fucked it up.
Yeah.
Because Bree goes to the pharmacy and invites George to a party on Saturday. Well, she says that first they have to break up, the pharmacy. She's like, I can't come here. You can't be my pharmacist. And he's like, well, I'm dating this chick, Ginger.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, perfect. Come to the barbecue. And I'm like.
She makes it sound like it's her barbecue, which it's not. I thought that was odd.
So
she's like, come to this barbecue that we're hosting for a friend that's going to prison.
Yeah, I know. And then bring Ginger so that Rex will feel better. And I'm like, this is a lot. So he's stoked. But I'm also like, psycho energy to just lie on the spot about your coworker that you just berated 2 minutes ago.
I know, he like emotionally abuses.
Yeah. And say that she's your girlfriend. But Gabby was also at that pharmacy at that time taking a pregnancy test, which we'll get to later. And Gabby ends the scene by coming out and screaming. So then we go to the party, and Rex sees George and is fucking pissed. And Ginger looks a little strange. Ginger is not the type of girl that you would see George dating. So Rex is immediately like, they're not really dating.
Yeah, he's like, this is stupid.
Because Rex sees, like,
I'm not an idiot.
Yeah, Bree's like, he's dating this girl. And Rex is like, fuck no. And then he, George accidentally throws a drink on Rex because Rex whips him around.
Yeah, that actually was Rex's fault.
They argue a bit about Bree, and Bree is like still down to hang out with him at this point. And then Rex ends up pushing him in the pool, and he takes Bree with her. So that happened.
Rex played himself a little bit.
Yeah. So that's that. And then Bree goes to the farm. Well, yeah, Rex also doesn't even apologize because Bree is like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You pushed me in the pool. And Rex is like, in my defense, he took you with him. And I was like, wow. So Rex is no longer the cool guy anymore to us.
I just feel like if Rex is so, like, annoyed with it, like, why didn't he just offer to take Bree to do these things that she likes? Like, if he really doesn't want her, like, finding, like, not that her actions are appropriate, but I feel like if I were Rex and my wife was this desperate for a friend that was, like, into this stuff, like, I'd be like,
just be cooler.
I'd be like, oh, well, let me, like, this isn't my thing, but, like, it's something you care about. Like, let's go together.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Rex, like, just can't, he's so insensitive. Like, my brain is just like, why, I don't know why they got married. They have no similar interests.
He's all threatened and shit.
Yeah.
So after this scene, Brie goes to the pharmacy wearing, slaying in her hottest sweater is what I said, and pearls. She's wearing like a nice white sweater and it like fit her perfectly. And I was like, oh my gosh. So she said, you left before I could apologize. And he's like, Rex hates me. Like, he won't let us be friends. And Bree's like, he doesn't hate you. And it's not his choice if we can be friends. And he's like, what if he orders you not to see me anymore? And she's like, I decide who I hang out with. And I decide that I need you in my life.
She is, like, being played like a fiddle.
Yeah. And he's like, he's going to make it difficult for us. And she's like, he doesn't have to know how I spend my time. And I'm like, but you don't even want to fuck this guy. Okay, like, not that you need to, but, like, you don't even, like, you're not even that interested in him. Like,
I don't understand
her. You're not even that down for him. So, like, what's happening? Like,
she's acting so, like, naive. I just, like, I don't know. It doesn't really make sense to me, but go off, Brie.
It's pretty wild. So that's how they end up. And then Gabby has a even better storyline.
Yeah, so we get a nice opening scene with Gabby at some fancy car.
She's at, like, a Porsche dealership or something.
Maybach, maybe? I don't know.
I think it's Porsche, but I'm not a car aficionado. I don't give a fuck about cars.
Yeah, no, I'm an idiot with cars.
Yeah, so.
But basically, she's, like, checking out this new leather-interiored, beautiful car, and it, like, overpowers her, and she vomits in it. And then, like, the sales lady is like, oh, I feel you. Like, I had all the same symptoms with my eldest. And Gabby's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And she's like,
I'm not pregnant.
She's like, oh, well, you have all the symptoms.
This, like, lady is, like, petrified. She's like, oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't mean to imply that you're pregnant, but you are, like, pregnant. Like, you're pregnant.
So Gabby, like, she ends up buying a car still. She like, gets the sporty one because she's, like, in denial. She's like, no, yeah. I need the sporty one.
And then also, is this episode sponsored by the pill? She says she's on the pill, like, 5 times. She's like, I'm on the pill.
She's fucking shook that she got pregnant.
Yeah.
Even though she literally says 8 times that it's 99.9% effective.
Yeah.
So does she take the test before she talks to the priest?
Yeah, she goes to the pharmacy.
Yeah, so we see her in the pharmacy, and she, like, freaks the fuck out because obviously it says she's pregnant. And as we all love to remember, she's been fucking both her husband and John, so...
Yeah, get it where you can get it, I guess.
Personal hell over here, but... Yeah, and then she talks to, like, the priest about it, and her poor priest is just like, what now? Like, God, fuck. Every time he sees Gabby walk up,
he's like, I know. Fuck. I kind of liked that she has this intimate relationship with her priest, though.
I know.
He's like, because it's not the same one that she talked to about John.
Yeah.
Oh, it is? Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought it was some other dude.
No,
okay.
It's the same one.
All right.
So he, like, that's why he's like, what now? And, like, he basically tells her, like, well, maybe God was working in that 0.1% or whatever. And I'm like... And yeah. Gabby, she's just, like, she feels like she's being punished. So they have this whole discussion about, like, punishment, I guess. And he's like, well, it's a baby. It's not.
Yeah. Everybody keeps feeling like it's a blessing in disguise, basically.
But she's like, I just don't think I'd be a good mom. I'm selfish. And Carlos is even more selfish.
Like, yeah. He doesn't even know how selfish I am because he's so selfish. Yeah. Like, so, yeah, the priest doesn't really give them any advice. Obviously, yeah. He's going to say keep it, so.
I know, we already know. He's already pissed that she was even on the pill,
yeah.
So.
So, then we hit the barbecue.
Yeah, so they're hosting a going-away party for Carlos. His government-sponsored vacation is what they call it. Everyone knows what it is.
I made a note. I'm like, would you go to somebody's going-away party if they were going to prison?
If it was a white-collar crime like that, yeah. I mean, like, if it was, like, he murdered someone, I'd be like...
Okay, maybe not then, yeah.
But, like, I mean, he did enslave people, though.
Okay, yeah, I'm, like, fucked up. If he, like, embezzled some money or something, yeah. Maybe, okay. But, yeah, we hit the barbecue.
Yeah, and Gabby's, like, getting sick, even just manning the meat table. She looks hot. I do.
She looks really good.
I also noticed Brie. I liked everyone's outfits, actually, at the party.
Everyone was looking stunning.
Yeah, everyone looked good wearing their outfits that
showing out.
Them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Gabby, like, goes to the bathroom because she feels like she's going to throw up. And she realizes that her birth control has been tampered with. And she loses her fucking shit.
Yeah, it was insane.
She comes out screaming at Carlos. I mean, screaming, which I would too. If I,
yeah, and Carlos just like smiles. Like, I think she slaps him or throws something at him, and he's like, huh.
Because he's like, pregnant. I'm, or yeah. We were pregnant.
He's
yay.
Like, wow. And I'm like, ugh, gross. So
Carlos gets what he wants yet again.
But like, then she talks to Susan.
Yeah. And Susan's like, why are you, like, this is a blessing in disguise. And Gabby's like, forget that. I don't know who the dad is. And Susan's like, what? And she's like, you're still with John? Like, what's going on? And she's like, yeah. And she's like, well, he's 18 now. So, like, Susan doesn't really care anymore.
So now you don't care anymore?
After all their whole last, like, friendship breakdown they had.
Yeah, and then that's when Susan's house explodes.
Yeah. So that kind of ends that part of the story for us.
So we can touch on Zach and Paul, because Zach doesn't stop being crazy after he interacts with Susan. When Paul calls him inside the house after he's, like, yelling at Susan. They have a bit of an argument. Because Zach is, like, washing his face to calm down. And Paul is like, Susan knows something and, like, you need to leave them alone. And Zach is really not getting that Julie does not like him at all. And he's like, I can't leave Julie. We can't move. Like, but Paul is like, we need to move because these people are going to find out. And then you're going to be taken away and I'm going to be taken away. And, like, that's how it works, sister. Like, mm-hmm. And he says, Julie loves me. And he goes, why does she refuse to see you then? And I'm like,
he straight up says, he's like, Julie's a really special girl. She could have any guy she wants. Like, you're not good enough for her.
He literally says, you're not special. He's not even a sorry to break it to you.
He's tearing him down.
He fucking annihilated Zach. Annihilated him.
It's brutal.
It was, oh my God. And Zach is like, she kissed me. And
he's like, yeah, how long ago was that?
I'm like, on your dick? Like, yeah, what do you mean?
What the fuck?
Yeah, he said, how long ago was that? And he's like, let's pack our bags and get the fuck out of here. So that's what happens with Zach and Paul. And then at the barbecue, Julie and Zach have a throwdown as well, because Zach is fucking so, I'm like annoyed for Julie. Like, everybody knows this one dude that just like won't fucking leave you alone. And he brings her a hot dog, which in theory is nice, but it's like, fucking go away. He brings her a hot dog and he's like, she's like, I'm not hungry. And he's like, well, there's some croquet. We can go hit some balls, you know? And she's like, no. And he's like, okay, we can just sit here. And she's like, I like don't like you. She just says it. And I have mad respect for Julie in this moment. And she's like, I don't want to be around you or anything. Like, just fucking leave me alone. And then
yeah,
he like,
she's fucking over him.
Yeah. So that's where that ends. So yeah. And that's pretty much where the party and, like, the episode rounds out. Edie and Felicia made an appearance at the party. I noted that Edie's outfit was crazy as fuck at this party, with pink sunglasses to complete it.
She looked like the Olsen twins.
Yeah.
It was a very, like, I needed a twin Edie to walk up in a blue version of that outfit.
I know. It was a great outfit. So, fit and Spo Friday. But Mary Alice Young ends the episode saying, spring comes every year to Wisteria Lane. Not everyone remembers to stop and smell the flowers. Some are worrying about the future or mistakes they made in the past. Others are preoccupied with not getting caught or thinking of ways to catch someone else. Still, there will always be a few who will remember to take a moment and appreciate what spring has given them, as there will be those who prefer to sit in the dark brooding over everything they've lost. So, this episode slapped.
This episode super slapped. We should just dive right into our fuck, marry, kill.
Okay.
Shit. I should have had mine ready, I guess.
I didn't really have mine ready. I'm going to kill Zach.
Okay.
Going to go hard with that one. Because I find his actions to be so fucking annoying. So annoying. Like, I find it heartbreaking that he's not getting the message, but also he at this point is harassing this young woman.
Yeah,
he's harassing her and his mother and freaking out at them at every turn, and I hate it.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna kill Carlos, just because it's the birth I've already killed him for this action, but now that she's actually
the birth control,
yeah, now that she is pregnant from it and it worked, it makes me very angry. I don't like that he got what he wanted. So yeah, I would kill him.
Okay. That's tough. For like, there's a lot of people I wanted to kill this episode. Like, Tom is a close second for me, actually.
I was not happy with Tom either.
So I can't marry or fuck him. I also hate Annabelle. Like, normally I'd have some fun and say I would, like, fuck somebody like that, like a character like that, but I also don't have any respect for that.
No.
I'm gonna actually fuck Shaft.
Okay.
Because he's returned and he's gonna save the day.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to marry Mike for still caring and loving about Susan, even though they are distant, and going out of his way to find her in that coffee shop and mourn her, which how did he know he was there? She was there.
I don't know, but I'm going to marry him, too. I like that idea. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to fuck. I'm going to fuck Susan this episode.
Okay.
She took some action. She defended her daughter. She protected her. She did some digging. She finally said, fuck it, I'm just getting a PI involved, which is what she probably should have done in the
like many moons ago.
Yeah. But I liked Susan. I was team. I think she handled things well for once.
Go Susan. Team Susan. I really enjoyed her storyline.
And then Housewife of the Week.
I'm going to say, okay, never mind. I was going to say Edie, but she also fucked over Susan this episode.
Yeah,
gonna
she did.
For
she
the
came real quick.
Lynette, but I'm going to give it to Gabby. Not that she did anything spectacular, but, like, she's pregnant and now she has to solve this problem.
See, I think I want to give it to Susan. Oh, I just really liked how she handled the Zach
situation. Yeah, Gabby is just, like, in a pickle. I think Susan actually did some actions this week.
I think
she
was a good mom in this episode.
All right, Susan. Yeah. Susan
for once.
took gravel to the face.
Yeah.
Just told Zach, like, it broke up with her daughter's boyfriend for her, basically.
Well, and protected her later on in the episode, too. And was like, no, like, that's not your girlfriend. Get away from my house.
So, Susan.
Okay, and then Apple rating.
Oh my god, I'm a little bit nervous.
I am too. Okay. 3, 2, 1. 4.75.
I'm gonna give it a 5.
You're gonna give it a whole 5.
I'm gonna give it a 5. It had an explosion, it had Shaft, it had all the characters.
You know what? I think you're.
You can give it a 4.75.
No, I'm gonna give it a 5 too. Honestly, I kind of wanted to give it a 5, but then I was like, what if she. But.
Because no, there are, like, flaws in it, but, okay, the last episode we gave a 5 was Guilty, because it was a peak episode in terms of drama. In terms of drama, I'd say. It just, like, hit everything really well.
I think you're right. You're
but
right.
This 5. Is more of a fun episode. This is more of a fun 5. Like, there's an explosion. Shaft returns. There's a lot of mysteries are solved. Edie's in it. Paul's in it. Zach is peak psycho. All the characters I've met. Lynette is like
gets
freaking out. Like Bree is being weird as fuck. George is there and he fakes that he has a girlfriend. There's a barbecue.
All the characters are together for a scene.
Someone is pregnant. Yeah. Like it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
So I fuck heavy with this episode.
Okay. We'll give this will be our, this is our second
5.
Double 5.
This is
okay.
Our 5 star. So oof. I want to know this Fear No More, you guys. What's up? How do you guys feel about it?
I know. Reach out. We got to hear it. I want opinions.
I need to know.
It
snuck up on me. I watched the episode and I wasn't expecting it to be balling like this.
But we are getting to that point where I feel like all the episodes are going to be balling at this point because we're going
to be.
Everything's starting to wrap up.
Good. We had some lame episodes, I have to say.
And we introduced Gabby being pregnant 5 episodes before the season ends. Like, if that, no, like
3
episodes.
I think,
3 or 4.
Or 2, maybe. I don't know.
Because we have.
This is 20. I think there's 23 episodes.
Okay, so 22. We got final 4 and Gabby's fucking pregnant. Like, okay.
I mean, I'm not prepared for what's going to happen. And I need to know, like, season 2, what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that Mike didn't die. I was worried that Mike might die first season for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also worried that Paul will be put away. I'm not sure how much longer Paul is going to be around. I hope Shaft returns in later seasons. I need to know more about Andrew's insidious plan. There's a lot going on. So either way, that's where we're wrapping up today. We drop every Monday, so tune in every Monday. Next Monday we'll be doing season 1, episode 21. We tweet, we have an Instagram, check us out, like, subscribe, talk about us.
Hit us up on all the social medias.
Yeah, we are open to chatting. So with all that said, we're going to leave you with our normal advice to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.